You'll never believe it, but we have a very unusual interview sitting at the Flying J truck stop right outside Tulsa, Oklahoma. Rod Davis is with us, and this book, River of Fear, is the first of a three-book series, Rod, and it's very entertaining and interesting.
I'm glad you're enjoying it. I had a lot of fun writing it.
You know, welcome to the show, by the way.
Well, I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad to be in Tulsa, Oklahoma, my first time.
You're on your way across country doing a book signing tour, and you're nice enough to wait for us to catch up with you here. You're ultimately going to end up in Connecticut?
Yes, in Connecticut, and then up into the state of Maine, where we have a numerous amount of book signings scheduled up there.
Of course, all of that is on our website. They can check the schedule and see what it's like. It's by Morningstar Books.
Morningstar Communications, yes.
And they can order that from our website as well. I'll get into the book in a little bit. I wanted to mention that it is set in Maine, correct?
That's correct. In the northwest mountains of Maine during the month of January. That's my favorite time of year. I love to snowmobile, and we spend a lot of time up there doing that.
I understand, even though this is fiction, it's based on a lot of truth, a lot of interesting tales going on up in those mountains.
It is a blending of some true-to-life stories, for sure. And I wanted to bring out the stories. My wife and I have told people about these things all throughout our life. And many times they'd look at us like we were, yeah, right, okay, we better get those guys with the white coats. And so I decided to put the stories into a fictional type of a mode where more people would look at it and then bring it out after the fact of what happened, that the scenes that are actually happened in that book were real.
Can you give me an example of something that's based on more or less real life that's in that book? I mean, it's chock full of a lot of events.
Well, early in the book, I believe it was in the first chapter, two of the characters, Rob and Eileen, went to a place called Roosevelt Forest, and they happened to see a sphere about the size of a medium-sized beach ball, I guess is the best way to describe it. It had a circumference of maybe about 18 to 20 inches. And from that light, there was three lights about the size of a quarter to a half a dollar that came from it in a perfect triangular formation about the size of a pool rack directly at me. And I was just standing there watching those three lights, and all of a sudden, my wife started screaming. And when she started screaming, I said, uh-oh, I'm getting out of here, because at that point, the fear of God went through me. I was just watching them up to that point.
What do you think it was?
According to a friend of mine who has researched UFOs a lot, it was a UFO. It was part of what was known at that point in time as the Exeter sighting, which was similar in Exeter, New Hampshire. If we stuck around long enough, I'm not quite sure what would have happened. And sometimes I look back and say, gee, I would have liked to. I went back that night with a friend of mine, and it was gone at that point in time. But the thing that was most significant while we were there and we saw that, normally that area is absolutely filled with mosquitoes. I mean, they drive you insane. And the frogs, there was a swamp nearby, and the frogs would be peeping like crazy to the point where it would drown out any other night sounds. When we drove in there that night, there was absolutely no mosquitoes, and the frogs were quiet. When my buddy and I went back there later, after I brought my date home, the mosquitoes were eating us alive and the frogs were croaking like crazy.
I've had people tell me similar experiences, kind of a no-sound zone, I guess.
Yes, it was very much like a vacuum at that point in time while that sphere and those lights were there, yes.
Rod Davis is with us. This is Jerry Pippin, and we are doing this over a little snack here at a truck stop in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Never thought you'd do a radio show from a truck stop having a snack, right?
It's the last place I figured I'd be doing one.
You know, we're talking about this book, The River of Fear, and I highly recommend it. It's not really just about UFOs.
No, it's not. It's about people, how they react to UFOs. It's about disappearing animals, disappearing snowmobiles. It's about courage. That's really what it's about.
Now, the disappearing snowmobile, the first thing I thought of is you parked outside Joe's Bar and Grill, and it was gone when you came out.
Well, no, that's not quite how it happened. It was actually in the wilderness in the back hills of Maine in the Western Mountains, and riders and snowmobiles would just disappear into thin air.
You mean not while somebody was on them, of course?
Oh, absolutely. We're riding them.
Oh, really? So what would you do, end up in the snow?
Well, no, the snowmobile and the rider were gone.
Did anybody ever find them ever again?
Let's put it this way, they showed up again, but it wasn't because anybody found them.
You really got my imagination going. Were they still alive?
Yes, very much alive.
Let's talk a little bit about your newsletter. It deals not only with the paranormal, but UFOs as well. And we have sample newsletters on our website, of course. People can subscribe to this, right?
That's correct. They can subscribe by logging on to www.simplyunexplainable.com and log on to there, and they would get the newsletter on a monthly basis. And their name is kept private. It is not given out to anybody. It is simply strictly for getting the newsletter on a monthly basis.
In other words, you don't end up on one of those lists.
Absolutely not. We would be horrified if that happened.
Why don't you talk a little bit about this newsletter? I find it very interesting. Larry Dickin, our UFO producer, and I have been talking about it. And you really have some pretty interesting things that come up every month. How do you find this stuff?
It finds me, and I don't quite know how that happens. I've been very fortunate in not only having things to write about myself, I've met many people that have very, very interesting stories to tell, and they write about it, and we have authors as well as people that are just from a normal walk of life that are contributing articles on a monthly basis.
I was talking to some people who know you, and they said, if you ever get Rod on, you got to ask him about this haunted house.
Yeah, we lived for 2.5 months in a very unfriendly haunted house. Some of the things that happened in that house were incredible. And one of these days we'll have some of those aspects in the newsletter.
Now, you say they weren't, this was not a friendly ghost.
It was not a friendly ghost at all. In fact, our cat lived the entire 2.5 months underneath the couch. It did her business and everything under the couch, did not want to come out.
What was her reaction when she first showed up at that house, the cat?
Gee, I don't recall.
I just wonder if they, you know, sensed something right away or all of a sudden they realized there was something there.
Well, the cat did not act right from the get-go. It wanted to go out, then it wanted to come in. It wanted to go out, it wanted to come in. But I don't recall for exactly when it started living underneath the couch.
Where was this haunted house?
It was in the town called Shelton, Connecticut. And the house is now torn down. We heard rumors that it was built on an Indian burial ground. We don't know if that's true, but that could certainly explain some of the things that went on if that was a fact.
Now, when you moved into the house, had anyone told you that it was haunted?
No, but my daughter worked for the individual that owned the house that we were trying to buy it from. And she was there, and the guy's daughter was there, and the daughter said, I would never go in that house. There's too many strange things that happen there.
And the things were really horrifying. In other words, it just wasn't some kind of poltergeist joke or something.
No, they were very much horrifying, and as a matter of fact, it paralleled what happened in the Amityville Horror House that made movies about. It was very, very uncomfortable.
You know, interesting question that I always have is some people seem to be in touch with the paranormal and things like this happening. Other people just kind of blithely go through and don't seem to notice. Do you have a theory about that?
Not until just a few days ago. And I talked to a person that was very knowledgeable in the paranormal, and I asked basically the same thing of what you just said. Why am I getting so much and other people don't get anything? He says, somehow you asked for it.
Interesting. We posted your article about the missing time there in Las Vegas. Have you followed up any more about that? That's kind of interesting. You were on your way down to a casino for a meeting at a hotel, and what'd you miss, about an hour or something?
I missed 50 minutes of time, and I talked to a person that is a telepathic. And he claims that he's in communication with people from other planets. And I told him everything that I had been doing, and he said that he feels that I was pulled aside and parked for someplace for 50 minutes, fed information that at some point in the future, something will happen that will trigger it for me to be able to use that information.
And you didn't really figure out that you had some missing time right off the bat. Took a little while, right?
No, I did not. As a matter of fact, I thought that I had traveled instantly 2.5 miles through Las Vegas. So that's what I really thought at the very outset. It wasn't until I interviewed a woman that had an UFO incident where she and her family had an hour and 45 minutes of missing time. And after that happened, I happened to start, my wife and I were in the van, and the van happened to be what I was driving when I thought I traveled instantly through Las Vegas. And I started seeing flashes of the dash clock saying 9:30 rather than 10:30 is what I thought it when this incident happened. And when we got back to Las Vegas, I asked my wife for my phone bill, and she had initially said that there's no way I did leave later than I thought, and et cetera. And when I grabbed the phone bill, the phone said that I made the call to a buddy of mine at 9:40 instead of 10:30 when I thought I had done it when the incident actually happened. So that's when I knew for sure that I was missing 50 minutes of time. And I had told enough people that it happened instantly right when it happened. So I have a log, if you will, or a backlog of supporting information to show that I did miss that 50 minutes.
Do you have any recall at all of this 50 minutes, or is this blank?
It's a total blank, and that's why I've been digging and digging and asking as many people that are knowledgeable what could have possibly happened during that period of time. And the only thing that makes sense to me at this point is that I was pulled aside for a period of time and given some information during that 50 minutes that will somehow come to play somewhere down the road for me.
This is Jerry Pippen. We were talking with Rod Davis, and of course the book is River of Fear, and we'll talk a little bit about the book here again in a moment. But first of all, I've been doing a lot of shows out of New Mexico, and I find out that you're very interested in the subterranean situation up in a certain part of New Mexico.
Yes, very much so, in the Archuleta, Mesa, Dulce, New Mexico area. And I spent 2 weeks researching that what was going on in that area, mainly because of some people that I met and what they reported to me that they had seen. I found it very, very hard to believe at that point in time. So and that's why I think I missed that 50 minutes of time, because I spent 2 weeks on the computer researching. And I mean 2 weeks researching. And it was right at the end of that 2 weeks when I, going down a Desert Inn Road, I felt like this bubbling water go through the upper half of my body. And then that's when I found out that I had traveled 2.5 miles through city streets in Vegas instantly, but not instantly.
I've had some pretty interesting stories about the subterranean bases in New Mexico. Have you heard the story about the fatalities of the actual battle going on between the aliens and maybe the Black Berets?
Yes, it's a very well documented, and anybody that wants to be able to research that can do so by logging on, just type into their computer Archuleta Mesa, and there'll be abundance of information where they can get details on that particular battle that you're talking about. Yes.
So you, you're pretty much a believer that that, you do think that base is still there?
The base is still there, but there's those that believe that the aliens are no longer there and it's now the government that's operating it themselves. But based on what individuals have seen recently there that have reported to me, I think that the aliens are still there also.
Of course, we need to mention that you have a background as a writer and a journalist, so you... You have a naturally inquisitive mind. Inquiring minds want to know, and Rod Davis wants to know you. What's your latest project?
The latest project is digging out some additional factual information that I need for the follow-up book for River of Fear, The Pursuit.
And that will probably come out, what, in about 6 months or so?
Yes, I'm hoping that it'll be out around March or April of next year.
And you actually have a third book in mind as well.
There's the third book, which is River of Fear, The Escape. And that will be out 1 year from this coming spring.
This book is available, of course, as we said, from our website. And talk a little bit about this first book. You know, when you sit down to get ready to write a book, a lot of times it takes a life of its own, even though I'm sure since you planned to do three, you probably had some sort of outline.
Yes, actually the book was supposed to be, I had it planned out that it would be about 900 pages. And when the publisher got a load of that, he said, no, he said 900 page books don't sell anymore, make it a trilogy. But the book was totally planned out from the get-go.
And you... You love Las Vegas, but you can't snowmobile there.
No, I have a real problem because my heart is in two places.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the West. You're pretty entranced with that, even though you, I take it, you grew up in the Northeast.
I grew up in the Northeast, spent my entire life there. I came west for the first time in my life, really, to spend any time in 1995. And I, much to my surprise, I found that I really liked the desert. Like is a bad word. I loved the desert. And my family said, are you going to move there? And I said, nah, I'm not a desert rat, but I like to go visit. Unfortunately, I did move, but there was a dual reason. There's a lot of things going on there that I'm able to get some very good first-hand information that I need for my next book.
Right there in Nevada.
That's correct.
Well, you know, talking about things right there in Nevada and talking about subterranean bases, how about Area 51? Have you made it up to Rachel yet?
I have not gone to Area 51. I don't know why, but I always tend to start at points that are further away and then work back toward the middle. And that's the reason I had started in the Archuleta and the Dulce, New Mexico area, and Sandia and Los Alamos. There's lots of activity there, but it all ties back to Area 51.
Can you give me... You know, I agree with you, but I'm kind of interested in why you think you're so positive that it all is tied together.
A person that by the name of Phil Schneider, and I did a lot of research on Phil and also Paul Benowitz. Both of them, if you take everything that they have researched, and especially Phil Schneider, he was an underground engineer. And he told about the tunnels that connect between Area 51 and Archuleta Mesa, and also a lake. I can't remember the name of the lake, but it's now down in the Death Valley area. There's a huge underground system that ties all of this together. Phil Schneider, whose father was part of the Philadelphia experiment, gave many talks on what he discovered with Archuleta Mesa and Area 51. And he was found dead in a hotel room in Oregon and the autopsy showed that he had been strangled with a piano wire, and it was deemed that it was an accident.
It's pretty hard to commit suicide that way.
Yes, it is very hard, in my estimation, and they never found the piano wire.
A lot of things like that have happened to researchers. As you get into some of these things you're talking about in your book and some of your other projects, have you ever thought you were in danger?
Up until I had that 50 minutes of lost time, no. Now,
not even with the ghost in the house, huh?
With the ghost in the house, it was scary, but I still felt that I was in control because the ultimate resource that I had was to leave, which we did.
Were you able to see these ghosts?
No, never. I did see a cat that wasn't there. I did see a spider that wasn't there. I did feel very, very cold air. I mean, very, very cold air. I could see my breath while I was sitting on the sofa. My wife and children were out. She wouldn't stay in the house by herself. And I had come home early. And it was summertime. And I'll never forget that experience as long as I live. But one night when I was laying in the bed, shortly after that cold that I felt, I used to sleep with my hand hanging out over to the right side of the bed, and I'd be laying on my right side. And I woke up in the middle of the night, and something was crushing my hand, and the pain was intense. I jerked my hand back, and I bet it was about 10 years before I was able to sleep with my hand hanging out over the bed again. I just couldn't do it.
Do you have an experience like that? I think I'd be looking in the closets and the shadows of every house I moved into or visited.
Well, when that happened in that house, your body senses that there's something not right. Your body senses it. Your sixth sense, I think, comes alive for you. And
so you went to that house and the hairs on the back of your neck stood up.
Yes, it didn't feel right, and my mother-in-law, who I always accused of being a witch, she said that she didn't like that house at all. And my mother-in-law and I get along very well, by the way.
I took it that you were using witch in the finest of terms.
Absolutely. But she could see things. She had dreams, and the dreams if she'd tell one of the children, "Don't go out because I think you're going to have an accident. I had a dream," and until they believed her, they used to go out. And when things started happening, when she had a dream, then she became the person that, when a warning was issued, people paid attention.
So pretty much, you know. I guess the message is you have these dreams, or certain people have dreams, or we talked about mediums before we started doing the broadcast. Certain people do have an ability to foretell things.
Yes, they do, and it's because their senses are on a higher level than other people. Everybody has the same ability if they train themselves to do it. Some people it comes more naturally than for others, but everybody can train themselves to do it. They take an example. There's people that go to school and they're a straight-A student, and they don't hardly crack a book open, and they're a straight-A student. There's other students that are straight-A, but they got to study like heck to get there, and that's all I'm saying. Everybody has the ability, but some people it just comes naturally for them.